I've got 8 a.m., Amelia. Let's get started with this regular meeting of the Improvements Committee of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District for October 6, 2020. The next item on the agenda is comments from the public. Is there any comments from anyone attending this morning? Hearing none, we'll move on to reviewing the monthly updates. Paul?
All right, Amelia, if you could scroll down to the monthly updates. So I want to, as I've started to do, I've been providing items of note. These are items of concern that are popping up with our operations in the Field Operations Division of Rancho Murrieta. And to follow up from the last board meeting, Director Mabee suggested that we take this item up top forward just for discussion at the Improvements Committee meeting. John Sullivan had a question about a roadway across the golf course and was asking me questions about it. And as it's not a district project, I just provided him the direct contact information for the project manager and the senior engineer on the project. And I hadn't heard anything back from John, so I assume he's satisfied with that. At the water plant, the drying beds there, as shown in this photograph, if you scroll down a little bit, Amelia, you can see it a little better. Maybe zoom out so it can fit the screen a little better too. That's was part of our treatment process. We remove solids and then those solids are put into these drying beds to get dried out and then scooped out and hauled away. This drying bed here was not working very well. It was backing up quite a bit and it's not draining as it's supposed to. So we did a little investigation in it. And if you scroll down a little further, Amelia, you could see on the engineering plans, they were just supposed to, when I say they, the contractors as part of the water treatment plant expansion were just supposed to enlarge the back basin as shown on the plans there. And I highlighted it in red. So they were just supposed to extend out the piping and put in some further drain lines out there to drain it further. But if you scroll down a little further, Amelia, I found this construction photo where they had just gunited the site. They did extend the pipe out, but then they just put in a Y connection. And then from those connections, we had dug down recently underneath the sand that's around it and just found like two 4-inch corrugated pipes that you'd find in like some landscaping drain. That does not suffice at all. And it didn't have any of the geotech cloth over the gravel pack that was supposed to be around it or anything like that. So we've got some problems out there. I'm going to rectify it by saw cutting up that Y section, removing it and extending out the pipe as it was supposed to be put in, and then put in some proper drain pipe, and then put in some round rock and some fabric around it, and then sand the beds with the proper sand that's supposed to be in there to allow it to filter and drain out. So these waters that then are collected from these basins with the draining do go back to the headworks of the plant for reprocessing to be efficient with the water use there. And that's a legal requirement by every water treatment plant in the state of California, is that you have to recycle your backwash water and your process water. So that's part of what's going to be done. So that's a little update on that. And at the wastewater reclamation plant on our east staff, as I had mentioned a few months back, we had a blowout in one of the metal pipes there. Scroll down a little bit, Amelia. And when I say blowout, some rust just caused an issue with the water blowing out of the pipe, and I drew on the plan section where that issue was, kind of highlighted by a little orange blob that you can see there indicating rust. And so it's an interesting piece of pipe where it's welded off of a flange into a center can. That's all one large welded piece. So it's not an easy replacement. So I've been in contact with a couple vendors to see what it is they could do. And I don't know if it's just vendors in general or vendors with this COVID environment, but getting responses back is like pulling teeth. So I've been really pinging on these guys to make sure that they respond appropriately. And the original manufacturer finally is responding, and they hope to get us something by the end of next week that I can report back to the board on as far as a budgetary cost for doing some maintenance over. And so that's a little update on that. If you want to scroll down a little further, Amelia, I'll move on to the district right projects. And so the water rights renewal application fees have been submitted, just waiting back for some information as to processing of it. As our consultant had said, it could be years before they actually get to it over at the state because they are so backed up with those type of applications. Recycled water fee study, again, that's still on hold. The chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite project, we are moving forward with that. Now that staff's got a little, well, I was hoping they would have a little more bandwidth this time of year. Typically around October, weather cools off significantly and our operations slow down. However, this week we had a water leak last Friday, one yesterday, another one today. God willing, no more this week, but we'll see. So they are getting things done over there, along with our electrical contractors installed the ultrasonic level monitors for the tanks. So we can track how much product's in the tank and then routed the information lines. Those are called telemetry lines back to where the SCADA system would have connections. And as noted in the packet here, our next step is to have a SCADA, which is supervisory control and data acquisition program, some programming done so that we can tie the information for the level of the tanks and for the 4 to 20, which is referred to as a flow pacing feedback control loop on the chemical feed pumps, so that the feed pumps will modulate their feed based on flow and then in the future off of chlorine residual as well, based on set points that we would have in the SCADA system. So the SCADA system basically is like the computer interface where you can do all your control of your set points and see what's going on with your facility. That's a very brief overview of what SCADA is, but that's the next step of what it is we'll be doing over there. And so to date, our costs are around $126,000 on it. And that's still below what the total cost would have been just for the engineering to see what it is to do on the project. So we're still way ahead of the game on that, but we've got a lot more money to spend, and I'm not willy-nilly spending any money on it. Getting the SCADA system, there is a primary component of what we're going to be doing in the wastewater system, of having control and monitoring of what's going on in our wastewater facilities. Scroll down further, Amelia, please. So there you can see in the photographs, you get the new tank in the background. The old tank is up front. It looks worse than what it is. It's just insulation on the outside of the tank to protect it from the elements. And then we, at one point, had it painted over, and that paint's just peeling off of it. But you can see all the new water lines that we put in there, all the conduit that's been ran for the telemetry systems, as well as we've done some back paving in there to pave the areas we trenched for installation of the electrical conduit and telemetry lines. And if you scroll down a little further, Amelia, tiny bit. So, nope, too much. So the dam inundation mapping. So we received receipts back that Calero, Chesbro, and Michigan Bar 1 dams emergency action plans have been received by Sac County OES. So that's good. Just just a notice they've received them. They haven't gotten to viewing them yet. So that's the status of that. At our 6B sewer lift station, which is one of our primary sewer pumping stations over in the north, serving the Unit 6 development there. Tesco, which is our electrical and instrumentation provider, they have replaced the programmable logic controller and the electrical backpan components there that were having issues. And in doing so, they allowed the facility to remain in continual operation without any issues. That's been good. The project's about, I'd say, 96% complete right now. They just have a little more programming to do as it relates in the PLC for that's on site. And for a battery charger, for battery power backup, and then also to provide the complete manual of what's been done out there. So that's one of the great things that Tesco does is once they're all said and done with the work they do, they provide you very detailed manuals and electrical drawings as to what it is they have done. And Amelia is showing you here, on the left, you see the new L3000 programmable logic controller. That is the CPU, the computer unit, that is basically the brains and interface of that system operating it. And in the back, that's all brand new electrical components back there. And everything's, no one needs to go into those panels anymore. Everybody can access and control everything from the outside of the panel. So it's clean and safe. So that's good. It's very good. And we're glad that project's wrapped up. You scroll around a little further, Amelia. So I'll stop right there. I'm kind of rambling on. Does anybody have any questions on anything so far? I don't see any hands. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Martin. Back on the drying beds. Does the original contractor have any responsibility for that?
It's way beyond warranty period and anything that you can come back to at this point. So unfortunately, no.
Okay, thanks.
What's going to be the magnitude of that fix? Are we talking just ballpark?
I would guess probably about 6 to 8 grand when it's said and done. The big cost is going to be getting to replace the sand in there. Staff labor is not going to be that big on it. Pieces, parts in there. We're going to get schedule 80 well casing pipe that drains exceptionally well when packed with pea gravel around it. So that's going to drain. It's going to work fantastically at when we're said and done with it. But the big cost is you have to get a specific sand to go back over the top of the whole drying bed there in that section. And it's a pretty large section. And it's a specific sand of a uniformity coefficient that allows water to drain well through it. You can't just get washed sand or just any regular old sand and throw it in there. Otherwise, it just doesn't drain well. So there's going to be a bit of cost with that. And so staff's trying to track down those costs, and hopefully I'll have that by next week and updated for the board meeting if anybody's interested in that at that point.
And Paul, I'm sorry, but I couldn't understand how much the total cost was going to be, so I can put it in the minutes.
I honestly don't know, but I'm guessing somewhere between $6,000 to $8,000.
Thank you very much.
But the importance is to make sure that these facilities are working correctly, because we're going to be using these facilities in perpetuity, and you want to make sure that they work and function correctly so that we don't run into operational issues. Because if we don't have area to put our backwash water in, we run into major, major problems. All right, so moving on to development projects. No new information has been submitted to the district on the North Retreats North and East. However, the project reports back that they are continuing work on a traffic study, a greenhouse gas study. I think that's for the Rancho North project. Yep. So whatever version of this update of the board packet, that's not correct. So I apologize. On North and East, they did extend their tentative maps for the retreats North and East. That's the update with that. What's provided here in the packet's incorrect. On the Rancho North development project, no new information has been submitted to the district. However, the project reports that they are continuing work on a traffic study, a greenhouse gas study, and a schedule and notice of preparation. And to explain what a notice of preparation is, it's a brief notice sent by the lead agency to notify the responsible agencies that the lead agency plans to prepare The importance of that is once the EIR is published, that's when it goes out to public for comment if they want to comment on a project like that. On the Murrieta Gardens Highway 16 off-site improvements, there's been no discussions or update as it relates to that. Murrieta Gardens Lot 4 and 5, that's basically where the projects are next to the country store where a Starbucks is slated to be. They've requested some water and irrigation services and had some review and back and forth on that with compliance with recycled water on the irrigation systems to make sure it complies with our recycled water standards. We did install the water meters there as they requested. There's just a little bit of pending work with them putting in proper lids on recycled water boxes on the project, but project contractor was saying that those items are back ordered. So we installed the meter ahead of final approval just to accommodate them as a nicety to until such time that they can put in the proper meter boxes at the Murrieta Marketplace project. So there's some discussion, and Tom, you're welcome to jump in anytime on that one between Coastland and our general manager to approve bonding on some of the infrastructure on the detention basin, which is another item in this packet later on. So we can touch on that later. On the Murrieta Gardens Legacy Villas and Suites, it has a couple names floating around there. It's Lot 7 as part of the Murrieta Gardens project as a whole. Sometimes they call it the villas, sometimes they call it Lot 7, sometimes they call it Legacy Villas and Suites. So tried to include all the general names that they use for that project in there. And there's been a little back and forth on that as well with the project developers that they submitted plans for review ahead of submitting our documentation that we put in place for developers, where they would submit an extension agreement and a deposit agreement so that we can properly track the project, know who the project owner is, who the contacts are, what the project intends to do, that type of information. And instead, they just submitted a set of plans and said, review them. And so we had a little back and forth with them as what was needed in the meantime to expedite us facilitating their review, because they said they had a timeline that they wanted to get moving on it on. We had Coastland review the plan set and provide comments back on them. And I believe at this point they have provided deposit funds. However, I believe they have not provided an extension agreement yet. Only an application, a marked up, I should say, deposit agreement. And so that's where that project's at. So can everybody hear me? Uh-oh.
We can hear you, Paul. You're just so fascinating that we're dumbstruck.
Okay, all right, good. That just, sometimes I feel I'm talking to a wall. So, you know, with no one present, it's hard to see anybody's reactions.
Amelia, I'm not dumbstruck. I'm really offended that you would say that I'm dumbstruck. Of course, maybe I don't know what dumbstruck means. So,
well, it's a lot like awestruck, but in my case, so I did speak for the group, and I apologize for that. I am personally dumbstruck because this is so much amazing information, and a lot of it's still really new to me. But Randy, maybe you're just quiet.
All right, I'll continue on. So if anybody has any comment, just jump in, please. On Murrieta Gardens Lot 10, we haven't gotten any update on that project. On the Lot 11, which was going to be the future potential Circle K gas station, car wash, / Taco Bell, plan comment revisions have been provided back to Coastal Engineering. So there's, I think, been some back and forth like 2 or 3 times. And so Coastal is in the process of reviewing last revisions that have been submitted on that. On the Murrieta Gardens 1 and 2 infrastructure, no update. At the end of Cantova Way, there's a project there called the Murrieta Business Park. They've requested and paid for water services there. And we have installed the water metering services. Scroll down just a tiny bit, Amelia. And the project owner reports that they will be installing asphalt, landscaping, and completing the exteriors of the building soon, and are intent on completing the project by the end of this calendar year. So that's really going up pretty quick over there. At the residences of Murrieta Hills East, we've got no updates since the back and forth between Mark Martin and Bob Kyle. And last communication was for Mr. Kyle or that project to submit a formal application if they wish to proceed any further with communications with the district on that. On the Riverview project, Project has provided a second submittal of their phase 1A plans, which include water study and storm drain study. They did this on September 22nd, and Coastland's still in the process of review. And if you scroll down further, Amelia, as part of the last submittal, they provided their phasing plan as shown in this nice colorful drawing here. And the phase 1A is the pink at the bottom of the drawing. And so that's what they're intent on trying to get done as their first phase of that project, as well as grading the entire site out. And scroll down a little further, Amelia. And so there's also another project over at the Rancho Murrieta Airport. So the airport owner has a project to add 2 more storage buildings that he's referring to as I and J on his plans. They requested fire flow information from the district and plan review by the district as well. So to comply with it, we had them fill out our forms, which were an extension agreement and deposit agreement. And we did the fire flow testing and provided a fire flow letter back to the project, and Coastland Engineer reviewed the plans. However, on looking at this a little further, we saw on the airport's account that their water use at the airport had exceeded an EDU allocation that had been granted for that site. And then there's potentially more sewer connections there than have been accounted for. So Tom had gone out and I believe spoken with the airport owner in regards to this, and a letter has been issued to inform him that the plans had been reviewed but signatures are pending review of outstanding fees, and that we're going to have to schedule a site visit and review of the square footage and sewer connections over there to facilitate our figuring out of what the EDU count is going to be for that site. And that's it with updates.
Comments or questions for Paul? I've got a couple things, Paul. So the issue over at the airport is the sewer hookups that there may be, or maybe Tom. Tom, have you scheduled something to go over there and see what's going on?
I have not scheduled anything. It's something I might be able to handle next week. I got to talk to Bradley, Mr. Beers, and set something up.
Paul, do I remember correctly that in the past that it was discovered that there was a hookup that went around their meters at some point, and there was a problem there, and I believe it was solved. But I guess my point is, this isn't the first time that we've had issues over at the airport with fees. Am I remembering that right?
Yes, you do remember correctly. So years ago, we found that they did have connections that were not approved by the district. And in discovering this, we ended up, there used to be a loop system on the water mains that ran through that area. And we found they had made some connections onto that loop system. We isolated those connections and had the project being the airport, install a single point of connection at a large commercial meter feeding the site, so that if they do any connections, it's going to be on their own system. And so that was worked out in around the time of when Darlene was general manager, I believe. Or I think it actually was Ed Krause with that time. And then subsequent to that, there was discovered that they had put in a sewer dump station there too. And there was some communication between Darlene and Mr. Beer on that. And that's where we found that there was an EDU allocation given to that project of, I believe, a 5.2. EDU is equivalent dwelling unit for the general public, if they're listening in. And what our EDU count is 750 gallons per day per EDU. So that's a way of kind of figuring out how much water usage you'll have over there. We have to figure things out and see what's going on over there. We believe there's some more businesses that are potentially impacting the sewer system as well. So we have to look at all that.
Yeah, as I recall, the all of that went on before the present owner purchased the airport, and it was fixed as you explained it. But I think you might, Tom, you might look at some of that stuff to get kind of a background before you. Get the history of it before you go over there and see what's up now. So
I do know, this is Tom. I do know that I read a letter that Darlene had written to Mr. Beers probably about 7 or 8 years ago, discussing a little bit about what Paul's talking about. And she had made a decision as to the number of EDUs to apply to the airport as a whole. Or at least the property owned by Mr. Beers. So that's part of my homework, is to open that up and go back. You may also recall that in 2010, after he purchased the property, he made an appeal to the district to modify his security fee rate. And that appeal was denied because the security is based upon what the voters passed many years ago. So hopefully I can get this handled next week and be able to report back maybe by November as to what the outcome is. I do believe we're going to identify additional square footage that was not applied to our billing system the last time they did an upgrade out there. So might be another one of those complex issues.
Yeah, just what we need, another complex issue. Mm-hmm. One last thing, Paul, when you were going over Murrieta North, it was the villas, that you got a marked up deposit agreement back. Is the developer not agreeable to our standard form? Is that why it got marked up?
I can answer that. Randy, I'll go ahead and answer that. The Murrieta Gardens project as a whole is that 55-acre parcel that's been chopped up now into probably 100 different parcels, with the 78 homes being built and the variety of businesses along the highway. And in between when they started that project in 2000 and about 12 or 13, and a few years later, and then now today, the forms that the district uses are have been modified, and they were worked on before I came here, but I believe Coastland and our attorney, Dick Shanahan, kind of updated the entirety of the form set of the different, there's like seven different forms you have that are available to be filled out as you make deposits and such. In this particular case, the developer has sat on the fact that the forms filled out in 2013 still override everything, and that in the Villas and Suites, which was a pre-approved project as a whole, doing the plan check, we didn't have a form that basically said, of this whole project, we want you to check out the plans for this little section. And so what John, Mr. Sullivan, did was he marked up one of the forms we have to meet a requirement in his eyes that was just for a plan check and nothing further. I disagreed with that, but when all was said and done, because we were trying to work with John to get his project going before the rain started to fall, eventually I went through the form that he had marked up with Dick Shanahan, and Dick said, why don't we just move forward and draw the line in the sand here and say the next form has to be exactly as the district prescribed, which is the mainline extension agreement. And that's where it stands. So we made a bit of an exception to move the project forward. I don't quite understand the entirety of the process for the different forms that we use for development. It's part of my learning curve. And in this case, I felt it was best just to move forward and then kind of take a look at it after the fact, which is what I talked to Dick Shanahan about. So that's the case there. We weren't in any danger. Like Paul said, a lot of this is just making sure that the contacts are available, the contact names and phone numbers, and that the plan of moving forward is documented. So what we utilized was okay. It wasn't perfect. And like I said a minute ago, development is something that I have to get brought up to speed on quite a bit of it, because it's a lot going on, and we have the retreats in the future. We have the Riverview coming up quickly, and then of course more business development over there in the gardens area. So I'm catching up as quickly as possible. Does that answer your question?
It absolutely does. Thank you. Sure. Anything further for Paul on the updates? Hearing none, let's move on to the Laguna Joaquin update.
So continuing on with Laguna Joaquin, we've done a lot of midge fly treatments over there as conveyed in the packet here. We had a contractor apply more of the liquid midge fly product to the maximum rate of the product within the minimum legal application time. So you can't legally apply like it back to back to back to back. You can only legally apply it within a 2 week, you know, minimum 2 week window. And that's what we've been doing at the suggestion of the SAC Yolo Vector Control District. They say, you know, try to hit it really hard back to back to back. We had done a seventh treatment, and actually an eighth treatment last Friday on the second. So eight treatments have been done in Laguna Joaquin so far this season, with a ninth treatment to follow. And so, you know, scrolling down a little further, Amelia, if you can get there. So we're just kind of hoping this cooler weather is going to, you know, which it typically does, it puts them in a stasis and doesn't really kill them off. They just kind of hibernate until the weather gets nice and warm again, and then they start hatching again. But also in the meantime, SAC Yolo Vector Control District gave us some light traps, which basically is just a light with an attractant in there, and then they get trapped into a jar where a product there kills them. It's working kind of well to capture them. And we've noticed that the capture rates have dropped off quite a bit. So that's a good indicator that the amount of midge flies is potentially dropping off a bit. So again, could be because of the cooler weather, or hopefully that the treatments are working, or probably more than likely a combination of both. And then looking for continual solutions moving forward, I put an RFP packet together for environmental consulting services, which Tom and Amelia looked over and then posted out. Amelia put it on the CSDA's request for proposal website. We got it on the district website, and I sent it out to several local environmental consulting firms. Bids are due back tomorrow, or I should say proposals are due back tomorrow. So we'll see what happens with that, and I'll report back to the board on that and potentially moving forward on that. And some of the short-term actions we've done is increase the number of midge-fly treatments. As I mentioned, added light traps and doing a bunch of research. Saw that bats eat up to 1,000 flying insects a night. So I want to try to get some bat boxes and install those in an area that's not going to be inconvenient to the public. I'm probably thinking down in the spillway area of the drainage just below Laguna Joaquin, so people can't access them or get near them either. And that we still have a whole list of ideas that we're potentially going to be working on. But then also whatever environmental consulting firm, if we proceed with them, these would be some of the potential ideas that they could look at and assign costs to. And then as far as operations of Laguna Joaquin and supplying it water from the Cosumnes Irrigation Association ditch, it's been a while since we've been able to put water in there from the Cosumnes Irrigation Association ditch. River flows tailing off. It's still decent for this time of year, especially considering we had a week of near 100 degree weather again. For this late in the season, it's amazing it's flowing at where it's at. However, the ranchers nearby are taking all the water, as well as the Equestrian Center for Dust Control around their facility as well. So we haven't been able to put any water in for a little bit, but we're monitoring it daily as far as dissolved oxygen levels. Hopefully weather's going to cool off and make the water cool off. Cooler water holds more oxygen. So hopefully we don't have a fish kill over there. Hopefully don't see that being an issue, but we'd love to get some fresh water in there sometime soon. And as of today, the water level's about slightly over 8 inches down from the spillway, which isn't too bad. That's where we're at with that.
Questions for Paul? I've got just a couple things, Paul. What, I guess the biggest thing to me in this Laguna Joaquin thing is we're trying all these things. What is our measure of success when people stop complaining? Or
that's the number one metric, basically, is the number of complaints. I haven't received any direct calls. However, Amelia provided some information. I think Amelia was at Facebook.
That was the district's Facebook page.
Where it sounds like people are still not satisfied with what's occurring there. So,
my fear is that we're doing this stuff and then the problem goes away and we don't know if it's because we spent money to try and do something, or the temperatures just got cooler and the problem just goes away every year. So I would like, if we're going to go out with an RFP to somebody that knows what they're doing on this stuff, mm-hmm. if there's got to be a way of putting traps out and keeping track of density in traps and so on and so forth, so that we can start tying some of this stuff that we're doing to it either working or not working. Is that, does that sound reasonable?
That's absolutely reasonable. And that was something we actually had discussed. It's easier said than done, unfortunately, because part of those light traps, that's kind of the purpose of those as well. You can see that there are less bugs being catched recently. So hopefully it's because of the, you know, you'd like to think that all these efforts and money and time you're spending on it is, you know, for a good purpose, and that it's going down because of that. But again, you know, as water temperatures drop, they tend to not breed as much, and then they go into like a bit of hibernation. And so it's hard to really say, you know, I'm not an expert, and that's why that's the point of going out to a consultant firm to hopefully find experts that can provide that detailed information. And not only with the light traps, but I had bought sticky traps and hung them in various areas all around the reservoir at one point, and then would go back and collect them. And what you're supposed to do is count them per grid, but they were literally covered with so many different types of bugs. I couldn't begin to start where, how to figure that out. Cause there was, you know, I could see like maybe a quarter of the critters caught on those sticky traps were midge flies. And then there was all kinds of other things. There was like beetles and little gnats and, you know, even though I do have a biology background, I'm not super familiar with, you know, keying out insects and the detail of that. So it is really, really hard and to figure out. It's just, it's a, you know, it's going to be a struggle, but yes, I hear you. You have to have some sort of metric to measure your success rate. And we think hopefully the light traps will be that way of monitoring and measuring the success rate over there as well.
Well, I would think if you bring somebody on board with an RFP that somebody, we're not reinventing the wheel here. Somebody knows how to measure success in this. And then I have two questions on the CIA ditch. One is, when we diverted water from Clementia, was the intent to fill it up to the top of the spillway, or did we go beyond that, or how much water did we put in there?
So we put about one CFS for I think 2 days, and that's cubic feet per second. So I'd have to calc that out and look at where staff tracked that. We wanted to fill it up to the top of the spillway. However, at that time, along the CIA ditch prior to it getting into Laguna Joaquin, there's a release point that goes back into the river. And the ranchers had opened the valve there, so not all the flow going along the CIA ditch got into Laguna Joaquin. A lot of it was released back into the river, so downstream ranchers could pull water. And so the hydraulics of the CIA ditch, there's very, very, very little grade difference between long runs in that CIA ditch. And if you don't create enough back pressure in the ditch to force the water into Laguna Joaquin, you can't get it up to the top of the spillway. And so that did not occur. I think we got it up to like 5 inches from the top of spillway or somewhere thereabouts, which is, you know, pretty decent. But
one CFS for 2 days, put us in the ballpark of what effect does that have on our water supply? Is it insignificant? Does it drop the lake a couple in? What? How much water is that?
It's almost negligible from Clementia, where it was getting drawn from. And if we needed to replenish Clementia, we can replenish it from Chesbro, which then can be replenished from Calero. So it's really hard to visually see it in the reservoirs. And then evaporation takes a huge play into each one of those reservoirs as well. So it's hard to, you know, say what's really affecting the level over there.
So where I'm going with this is should we have a policy that this time of year when the midge flies or a little earlier, should we have a policy of dumping that much water out of Clementia a couple times during this season to keep that water up and fresh? Or does that significantly affect how much water we have if we were to get in a situation where the river comes up? Although, every time we talk about this, it occurs to me that we fill up our reservoirs every year, and I've been here since 1986, and I don't believe there was ever a year where we didn't fill up our reservoirs. So I guess where I'm going with this is, are we endangering the quantity of our water supply if we were to dump water out of there two or three times a year to fill up Laguna Joaquin, or is it insignificant?
At this point, it's not really affecting with the number of homes that we have in the district currently. It really doesn't affect anything.
Well, that's a good point. At build out, the situation changes.
Correct. And Tom mentioned that we're going to be working with the Cosumnes Irrigation Association to renegotiate the agreement there. There's a lot of discourse with the agreement and understanding of the water rights surrounding everything. And so we kind of want to bring that all to light and revise the agreement that the district has with the CIA. So that's going to be looked at.
Okay, great.
This is Martin. With regard to the review of the CIA ditch agreements, are you going to be considering the operational issues in order to put some sort of consequence for somebody unauthorized making adjustments to the valves? It seems like that should be included.
Yeah, that would be nice.
This is Tom. It certainly is not addressed today in the current agreement. It's a very one-sided agreement. And the CIA has agreed also to crack it open and try to update it and make it something that's more palatable for all that's said, because, you know, the needs of the farmers, the needs of the equestrian center, the needs of Laguna Joaquin and the district, you know, need to be more equalized, and they're certainly not right now. So this is a very complicated issue and something we're spending a lot of time on. So hopefully we have the fruits of our labor will be a more reasonable situation for the district to be in the middle of. The critical part of the whole thing is, you know, part of the agreement is the Grand Lease Forbay, which, you know, we're half owner of, but I think we're almost entirely owner of any type of repair that needs to happen there. But the forbay is where we get our water from. So we don't want to jeopardize or put ourselves in a position where we have any legal issues related to our water right to fill up the reservoirs every year.
Oh no, there would be no impact in that. We have a clear easement for the Grand Lease diversion. The dam is part of the CIA agreement, but we can bring that all to light when we discuss that later.
I'm sure it sounds like you're on top of it, but this is keeping Laguna Joaquin getting fresh water in there during the summer months has got to be a topic of conversation in those negotiations.
Well, you know, Randy, the simplest, I'm not the expert, but the simplest way to fix Laguna Joaquin is to get rid of the game fish and just fill that thing up with mosquito fish, which is what SAC Yolo Vector Control told us was the most reasonable solution. It's the solution we use in our ponds at the wastewater treatment plant. We don't have a midge fry problem at all, but we also don't have bass and carp and whatever in our ponds like Laguna Joaquin has. And I have yet, in almost 2 years here, seen anybody fishing in Laguna Joaquin, and I've probably been by it at least 100 times. So if we can get rid of the game fish, the problem can be solved with mosquito fish. But that's part
well,
of
it. I see kids down there occasionally.
Okay.
On their bikes, throwing a lure out there, but that's gotta be a community conversation before we make a decision like that. But I certainly think it should be discussed, and we've got enough game fish and spots for people to fish that I don't know why we couldn't do that. It makes too much sense. So have we beat this one enough, beat this to death enough? If there's nothing further on that, let's move on to the purchase of a truck.
Yes, so thank you. We're looking to replace another one of the field operations vehicles. The vehicle being replaced is labeled as District 211. It's a 1997 vehicle, a classic, that's not operable at the moment. It had a 9-year depreciation term in the water fund, and it's far exceeded that that term of life, and the costs that are in front of it to keep that thing running are just not really viable. Doesn't make a lot of sense to keep a 1997 vehicle running at this point. So we solicited cost for replacement, the lowest cost coming from Future Ford of Sacramento, as shown there in the packet.
I have no problem with it, Martin.
I think it's a good idea. Go for it.
Okay. There you go.
Thank you.
Murrieta Gardens Detention Basin Bond.
Lori, would you like to discuss this one?
I will. Yep. Good morning, everybody. This is Lori Loaiza from Coastland. And discussing for you this Murrieta Basin Bond, to give you a brief history of this basin. It is a permanent stormwater basin that services all of Murrieta Marketplace, so both the grocery store and all of the lots there. When they wanted to open the basin, open Bel Air back last spring in May, this basin was supposed to be complete to plans and accepted by the district. And developer John Sullivan came to the district and said that he wanted to continue to use the pond as a temporary sedimentation basin, and therefore didn't want to make this pond had, as is outlined in the packet, is not graded completely according to plan and as was in the approved plan. There is a step there. And that had been noted in Coastland's punch list and has been discussed with the contractor and developer many times. And in interest of getting the Bel Air open, and also because it makes sense to allow this pond to be used as a temporary sedimentation pond for the remaining construction, the solution that was come up with between Mark Martin, the developer, and Coastland working with them on at that time was this bond. So the idea is that we would allow Murrieta Marketplace Bel Air to open, and that the pond would basically remain as is and not finished until they are done with all of the construction, and that the district would be protected so they would finish by putting together a bond. And so that's what's in front of you right now, is this bond. So it protects the district, because now that we've allowed Bel Air to open, this bond in place is what is a developer's guarantee that he will do this piece of the project. Also, because he is releasing the rest of the project from, you know, the rest of the bond associated. He has an overall bond for the whole project. And we're kind of piecing out this little piece. So that's what's in front of you today. It's a lot more complicated story than that. So I'm trying to keep this brief, but I certainly can answer a lot of questions about this, you know, if you want to discuss in more detail.
Questions? I see that the cover letter describes what the bond covers, but I don't see a signature on it from the developer. Is that just, yes, timing, or what's going on there?
To be honest, I'm not sure. It might just be timing. They did sign and provide the signed bond agreement, so we should go back to John Sullivan and request that he sign it. That cover letter was requested by the bond agency, and plus it's just good practice. We agree with it to outline, you know, what the, you know, $25,000 bond does. And so the bond agency had requested, you know, an underlying agreement, and that's what that letter recommends. So yes, we recommend we go back to John and get him to sign that as a gesture of good faith. So that is something that remains, that needs to be done.
Yeah, I don't know why, you know, you've got a bond that covers something and it's described in this. So I just think that's an accident waiting to happen if
they're on
what it covers. Go ahead, Tom.
Mr. Sullivan is going to, he won't sign this agreement because he disputes some of the work that we're asking to be done. And his discussion with me is that the basin has been operable for more than a year. It has been going through a full winter without any issues. And then he will also, if you look at number 7, that we're requiring that drains be cleaned and re-videotaped, he's going to dispute that as well. I'm telling you this because I don't want you to feel like he's just going to sign it, because he's not. Unless we have, I don't know how to get him to sign it. In the past, the only way we get him to sign certain things is when he's ready to open up a store or business. And we kind of use that as a strength and tactic to get him to sign. He's going to dispute cleaning the pipes because, as you recall, when the CIA ditch backed up a bunch of months ago, that it created a silt drain that went into the detention basin from the backing up of the water at the ditch over there by the detention basin. And so it's just another one of those issues where the developer wants one thing, we want another, and we have trouble finding a middle ground. So we can ask him to sign this. We can also ask him to come to the board and speak about his position on this. I think that's probably the quickest way to get to a completion on this issue, because he's dug in pretty hard because he doesn't want to have to pay five figures to have the pipes cleaned out. And to our concerns, you know, we've had experience where we see that there's material being put near the storm drain that could easily clog up those drains through the part of their construction. So this is kind of a rock and a hard place. It's hard to get him to do something he flat out doesn't want to do without finding a way to pressure him. So
this is Paul. So the reasoning, it's very odd what they do over there. And so that they want us to sign off on it, yet they continue to want to use it for their construction BMP. So if you're familiar with construction projects, any construction project has to file a SWIP permit, which is a stormwater pollution prevention plan permit for general construction of the site with the State Water Resources Control Board. And so they have to show that their construction project is not going to be contributing to sediments and downstream contamination of drainages. As they have continuing construction occurring, like lot 4 and 5, 10, 11, you know, 13, 14 in the future, legacy villas and suites. You can see the big, large dirt piles over there as we speak next to lots 4 and 5. You know, those drain inlets and those pipes that feed the detention basin, you know, if there's a large storm or there's a runoff or just general construction occurring there, they're supposed to have silt bags in place. And over the period of this project, we've come along and seen that, yeah, those silt bags are filled with dirt and construction debris, and they've caved in into the pipes. And that's why we're requesting that, yeah, the pipes were installed, you know, a couple years ago, and they do work when water's flowing through them. But, you know, you got all kinds of construction debris, and you're continuing to construct over there. And that's the point of noting it in this bond cover letter, to that it would go along with it, is that, yeah, you know, when this project's said and done, you know, you are continuing to use these facilities you built, but the district's final acceptance will be when you've done A, B, and C, and so we can accept it. Otherwise, it's going to be district ratepayers paying for the cleaning of those pipes and making sure that's all good and clean. So that's my 2 cents.
So maybe the way that this finally ends is we do the work and send him a bill and he doesn't pay it and we have to pursue it. Go ahead.
And to note, one small note is they're claiming that the pond is functioning. And I don't think they're wrong about that. The pond does function. It's a hole in the ground and it drains. The issue is at the step in the bottom, two things. One, it wasn't in the approved plans. You know, they are required to give the district a basin that looks like the ones in the plans that we approved. And two, the reason why it wasn't in the improved plans and we haven't accepted it is because it's an operational concern. So it's not so much that the hole's not big enough and that it's not flowing. I mean, I don't know if it is or it's not. You'd have to measure the square feet. It may be fine from a size perspective. I'd have to check that. But, you know, one winter year does not tell you if we've had storms the size that pond is designed for. Does that make sense? Because we had a pretty light year last year rain-wise. But regardless of that, it's an operational issue. So that's the whole site. And that's, I think, the reason why the district is concerned about it. Not so much whether or not it's big enough or that stormwater drains out of it, but the fact that it's hard to go in there and maintain it with that step. Correct, Paul?
Correct.
And that's why we're concerned about it. So he's kind of comparing apples to oranges, John Sullivan is. I just want to clarify that one point.
Yeah, and so to further elaborate on the issues with that step, it seems, you know, maybe to the general person, yeah, that's not a big deal. It really drops down steep into the bottom end of the drainage basin. That is a big deal, and I could have provided photographs, but I didn't want to embarrass anybody, that when they were doing the grading to expand the project out, as I provided in the packet drawing ahead, you can see that the basin was originally of a certain size. If you can scroll up, Amelia. So you can see go up a little further, Amelia. So I highlighted that it was an interim detention basin, and then highlighted at the little bottom part, it says future detention basin to the size it was supposed to get. They were supposed to go in and cut that down and grade it all down to the future size. And while they were doing that work, they had very large excavators get stuck in that area of the basin up to the cabs, to the point where another excavator came to pull out the excavator and got stuck. And then they brought in a third excavator. And if these giant tractors get stuck, you know, what's going to happen to district staff when they try to get in there and remove the trees and mow it and do work in there? We don't want to have to incur the liability of staff getting hurt and stuck in there like they were doing. So it's a really a big deal for future maintenance.
Well, just putting on my contractor hat for a minute, to me, it doesn't matter if you can make the case that it's functional. you got a set of plans and specs, and you're supposed to grade something to the lines and grades shown on the plans, and you didn't do it. It's pretty black and white to me. It's
exactly.
It's that simple. So, anything further on that?
Yes, I have a couple comments. In speaking with Mr. Sullivan and his engineers about this, his desire is to go through basic maintenance of the ditch or of the basin before winter sets in, which means they go in and they mow it down and pay attention to it as the winter goes through. And then they want to go through mowing it again next year in the spring and then sit down and discuss this further. At this point in time, their bonding is what it is. The bonding on their large project, it gets reduced as their project gets more and more completed. And we have a $25,000 bond on the basin and all of the infrastructure, the sewer and the drainage infrastructure for the entire project. So as far as having funds available to do what we need to do, they're there in the form of the bond. And I'm not exactly sure, again, development is something I'm learning on the fly. I'm not exactly sure what we have to do to activate using that bond to do repairs that he may not agree needs to be done, but we decide they have to be done. So his desire right now is to just leave things as they are, go through a couple of maintenance periods on the basin, and then revisit it in the summer. I'm not sure if that's a good idea or a bad idea, or if it doesn't matter that much. So I just wanted to, that's the last bit of information I have in my discussions with him.
Well, just a question too, maybe for Randy. I don't know if you have experience with it, but for a $25,000 bond, if we had to collect on that to get that basin to where it needed to be, what do you think the cost would be to excavate out that step and remove the material, let alone clean all the pipes, feeding everything?
You'd have to do a takeoff on how many yards of dirt are there and figure it at 40 or 50 bucks a yard. I haven't studied it that closely. But Tom, I think you're absolutely right. I think what happens here is you demand that he do this work. The grading, regrading it to what's shown on the plans is a no-brainer. That has to be done. It's what's shown on the plans, and those are the plans that are approved. And there's no getting around, well, what I did will work. No, that's not the way this works. It's here's what we want you to build, and you didn't build it, so it's got to be built. And I think he'll come to that conclusion after talking to his bonding company that he needs to do that work. As far as the pipes go, you go in there and after everything's done and clean them out, and you send the bonding company a claim on against the bond, and then the bonding company will do the legwork on deciding if they agree with us or agree with him, or negotiate a settlement between the two, and then if you disagree with what the bonding company wants to pay, then you're into the legal system. So that's probably the way that this thing is going to run its course. But that's how I see it.
I think that's exactly correct, Randy, and thank you for that. My only additional comment is, and it's regarding waiting till next summer, is they still have an open SWIP. One of the conditions to close out your SWIP is that your site has to be stabilized, i.e., you know, preferably grass growing is the easiest way to do that. If they wait to do this grading until after the rainy season next summer, it's a lot harder to get grass to grow during the dry season than it is, you know, if they were to grade it and then let it grow. You know, if they had already graded it and let it grow, you know, they'd be already set up. But that's kind of their problem. But, you know, they're kind of setting themselves up for a problem, and then they might come to the district and, you know, want us to solve it. But that's the only thing I have about waiting is that if you wait to do grading right before you want to close out your SWIP, contractors often have a problem getting things to grow so they can.
But. Yeah, and I've come up against that. And what happens is you're not going to hydro seed it or put erosion control out there when you know it's not going to grow. So part of the closeout is an agreement that come October or November that you're going to do X amount of square feet of a certain seed or so on and so forth. And that agreement usually closes it out. But you're right. You're absolutely right. It's their problem. They're creating their own problem. They're going to have to solve it.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world, and contractors choose to do that for various reasons often. So that's the only comments I have, and I agree with yours, Randy, so thank you.
Anything further on that?
We do have a hand raised, and it says J&T Public. If you'd like to introduce yourself, please.
Yes, this is Jane. I just want to mention, it seems like there's a lesson to be learned here, and I think we should have learned it a couple of times before, that, you know, we agreed to allow, like in this case, John Sullivan to open up the Bel Air, and because of that, we kind of lose our leverage, and then we end up getting screwed, or it becomes our problem. And, you know, this has happened several times before, and I think from now on, we say, hey, no deal. We've been burnt too many times. So I think we need to learn our lesson.
Okay, anybody else? Let's move on then to declare folding machine vehicles 211 and 217 surplus.
All right, I'll jump on this. This is Paul. So to close out, to be able to get rid of some of the equipment that we have that is no longer functioning, we want to declare them surplus so that we can start the process of removing them from our site. So two of those items are 1997 vehicles. One of them was just mentioned earlier above. And so we provided the information as it relates to them. That's number 217 and truck number 211, as well as the administration department has a folding machine that has failed as well. For whatever reason, it doesn't have the cost in this packet. I think we had a little issue, maybe Amelia, with getting some of the packet information updated when we were swapping around the various versions over the weekend. So the Pitney Bowes folder machine, we had a cost for that, and we can update that. That originally, I think, cost like, I don't know, $6,000. Cindy sent us that information from the administration department, but I believe it's no longer functioning as well. And that's why the district's been going out to a third party to print and mail statements. And so that's it. And then to do so, you have to pass a resolution to declare them surplus.
Any problems with this, Martin?
No, I think we should go forward.
All right, let's move this forward to the board. And with that, we're down to director and staff comments. Staff first. Staff, any comments? Any further comments, suggestions?
I'm okay. I don't have any.
This is Amelia, and I have a question. If I may go back a little bit to the bond, is it the will of the committee to move that onto the board for acceptance and approval at this point, or does that need to go to the board?
That's a good question. I don't know.
To To me, it doesn't look like it needs to go to the board. It's just part of the project.
Just, yeah, that's...
I don't recall any bond acceptance going to the board in my 2 years I've been here, nor do I remember that happening elsewhere.
Could ask Dick Shanahan.
Okay, yeah. This is being brought for discussion. Once signature has been obtained, district staff recommends that approval of approve the maintenance bond.
Which we do approve.
Once John Sullivan
with the caveat that this be sent to John Sullivan for his signature on the cover page, maybe with a time frame for him to return it, and then when we if he doesn't sign it, a follow-up letter saying that we consider that the bond, we can talk about that, but the first thing is to send it to him for signature again and give him a time frame to get it back to us, and then we'll react to whatever happens there.
Thank you very much.
Answer your question? Okay.
Yes.
We'll send it to him again with a strongly worded letter that he needs to sign it.
Well, I'm sure that'll make all the difference.
Yeah. It'll be short and sweet. All right.
Director, comments, suggestions, anything, Martin?
No, I'm good.
As am I. So with that, we will adjourn the meeting, this meeting of the Improvements Committee. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.